The Raj Quartet by Paul Scott. Episode 4, The Day of the Scorpion, dramatized by Shelley Silas, with Leah Williams as Sarah Layton and Geraldine James as Mildred Layton.
It stood 90 years on the floor. It was taller by half than the old man himself, though it weighed not a penny weight more.
Barbie, it's Sarah.
Oh.
May I come in?
Of course, dear. It was bought on the morn of the day that he was born and was always a treasure and a prize. Come in, come in.
I'm not disturbing you,
are
you?
No, of course not.
We've made it rather cheerful in here, Barbie.
Oh, do you think so?
What beautiful roses.
Mabel insists on fresh flowers every day, you know. It makes a difference to the spirit.
Oh, please. Carry on what you were doing.
Oh.
I was just passing by and I thought I'd see how you and Aunt Mabel were. But she's busy in the garden. Doesn't want to be disturbed just yet.
I was writing to Helen Jolly, my successor at the mission. She sadly does not live up to her name and is not as keen a letter writer as I am, but it can't be helped. I still can't get over the shock of Edwina's death.
These things take time, Barbie.
I mean, killing oneself is such a terrible act of self-destruction. It's wicked, Sarah. It's wicked. The Lord cannot have mercy on such a soul. She always seems so strong and sure in God and God's purpose. What happened to her, Sarah, to make her stop believing?
I'm afraid I don't know, Barbie. Have you got everything you need?
Oh, I'm very comfortable here in Rose Cottage. I have enough space for all my personal belongings. And Mabel seems cheerful enough. Does the bungalow provide adequate room for you and your family?
Oh, yes. Although Mother sometimes complains of it being too pokey, and Susan would prefer her own room. But I'm perfectly content.
Just content.
What else is there to be, Barbie?
I suppose we must all be satisfied with contentment. Very few people experience true happiness.
I'd better go and see if it's time to disturb Aunt Mabel.
Oh, will you join us for some tea?
Oh, yes. I think I will.
Oh, God. But it stopped short, never to go again when the old man died. Now, dear Helen, I received your letter yesterday. Thank you for keeping me informed of your work at the mission. I'm so pleased that you're happy there. The children do offer one great comfort. Mabel has been introducing me to her family and friends, and the Layton girls pop into Rose Cottage every day to see their aunt. I find I have grown rather fond of them. About Edwina. I pray every night for her soul, and although my prayers are not guaranteed reception, Edwina's need is greater than mine or yours. I hope, like me, you will continue to pray for her.
Susan's so excited about the wedding, Mother.
Let's hope she stays that way. I only wish she could be more like you, Sarah. She's so unpredictable.
Well, we have a holiday in Kashmir to look forward to. Perhaps that will help.
Perhaps.
The engagement's in today's paper.
What's that, darling?
Captain E.A.D. Bingham and Miss Susan Layton.
That's nice.
Aren't you going to read the whole piece?
I already know what it says.
Pass it over here, Sue. I do wish Father was going to be in Pancock for the wedding.
Mother's sending him a photo of Teddy.
Something for him to show the other POWs.
I do hope he likes the look of him.
Of course he will.
He's never been very fond of redheads.
Oh, congratulations, Susan. It's wonderful. Really wonderful. I hope you and Teddy will be very happy.
I wish I could say the same for those poor things. Imagine being born on exactly the same day your mother dies.
What's that?
Parvati Manners, born on the 7th of May in Srinagar, to Daphne Manners, who died on the 7th of May.
How absolutely dreadful.
Oh, it's all too sad. I don't want to be sad.
Come on, Susan. Do try and look at the good things. You have such a lot to look forward to.
But there's too much to do. Packing for the houseboat.
Susan, please, stop fretting.
And Teddy, being posted to Marat so suddenly and not here to help with the wedding.
It's all right, Sue.
It's not all right, Sarah. How can it be? I just wish Teddy was here.
My darling Sue, I cannot wait until we're together again. In Marat, the rain continues to keep me awake at night, making sleep impossible. The sound of the thunder is like an electric beast let loose across the land. Please tell Tony Bishop my trunk arrived safely here. I'm so pleased he's agreed to be my best man. It seems I have a roommate. I've yet to meet the chap, but he kindly left me a peg of whiskey. All I know about him are his initials, stenciled on the canvas cover of his battered suitcase. R.M.
Merrick, isn't it? I'm Teddy Bingham.
We meet at last.
What'll it be, whiskey or gin? Or are you a beer-only man at Tiffin?
That's very good of you, but I'm in a bit of a hurry. By the way, congratulations. Hossein tells me you're getting married.
Oh, did he? Well, yes, I am, thanks.
When's the wedding?
December, or earlier. Possibly just after Susan's 21st.
Well, earlier would be best. We'll be gone from here in a couple of months. Once that happens, you're unlikely to get an opportunity. Presumably you've talked to Selby Smith.
I've mentioned it.
Well, if you've really decided to marry, I'd advise going ahead as soon as possible. Here in Marat, for instance. There's a hill station called Nanura, not far away. You could honeymoon there.
How absolutely idyllic. And such stunning scenery.
Oh, do be careful, Fenny. We don't want to have to fish you out of the lake.
I am being careful, Millie.
This is where John and I spent part of our honeymoon.
Rather remote, isn't it?
I think that's the point, Aunt Fenny.
A blasted Manners child. Just our luck that her houseboat should be moored so close by.
Did Lady Manners respond to your card, Mother?
Of course.
Don't you think we should go and visit her while she's in Srinagar?
Absolutely not, Sarah.
But she's had such a difficult time.
Announcing the birth of that child and that girl's death, it's unheard of.
Fanny's right. A visit would be out of the question.
You all right, Sue?
Yes, fine.
Does Teddy have anything interesting to say?
My darling Susan, I just received your letter, dated 5 days ago, saying you were off to Kashmir in the morning, so I suppose you must be in Srinagar by now. As for our wedding arrangements, Sue, I've been advised to bring the date forward, because we might be gone in December. Can't remember whether I mentioned that Marat is a princely state. I've made some inquiries, and it seems the Nawab's guest house is available in October. There's a nice old church in the cantonment, and afterwards we can honeymoon in the Nanura Hills. I'll drop a line to Tony Bishop. I'm sure General Rankin will give him leave to accompany you all to Marat. By the way, I discovered the identity of the mysterious R.M. It's a chap called Ronald Merrick.
In Singapore last February, when General Percival surrendered to the Japanese commander, contrary to normal procedures, Indian officers and troops were separated from British officers and troops. The Indian side were handed over to a General Mohan Singh, who blamed the British for losing the battle and deserting their Indian comrades, announcing that the days of British imperialism were over, and that it was the duty of every patriotic Indian to form an army to help the Japanese drive the British out of India. And so the INA, the Indian National Army, was formed. The Indian National Army consisted of approximately 10,000 ex-prisoners, officers and men. But according to our information, little more than half of them were armed.
My dear
Lady Chatterjee, when I am re-established in Pindi, at Christmas time, for instance, perhaps you would come up and pay me a visit. I do not expect to be invited out a great deal. My own race hardly knows what to make of me any longer, and the existence of the child under my roof no doubt ranks as something of a scandal. Poverty grows more each day. Oh, Lily, how I wish Daphne were here to see her. After you left, I acquired neighbours. They moored nearby and were scrupulous about sending cards across when they arrived. Naturally, I returned the gesture. The result was an almost tangible air of embarrassment and curiosity emanating from their boat. Cautious nods, if we happened to cross one another's bows when out in the Shikaris. But no visit, except towards the end of their stay, and that by one of them alone, one of the two daughters, while the rest of them were out enjoying themselves one afternoon.
I'm sorry we haven't visited you sooner, Lady Manners. We didn't know what to say without making it obvious we were trying to avoid the awful business of your niece. We'll be leaving for Pangkot in a day or two, and I didn't like the idea of going without speaking to you. I've often heard the baby cry. I wondered, would it be possible to see her?
Of course. I took her down to the cabin where little Parvati has her cot. The girl, her name is Sarah Layton, looked at the sleeping child for quite a long time without saying anything.
She's so tiny. How old is she?
4 months.
I'm sorry. About your niece.
I was about to have tea on the sun deck. Would you care to join me?
I should probably get back. That's a lovely picture.
It was taken a few months before she died.
You must miss her.
Yes, very much.
Did you know Edwina Crane?
I never met her, but Daphne talked of her. She was taken to the hospital where my niece worked.
She was a friend of Barbie Batchelor's, my Auntie Mabel's companion. Well, Mabel's not really our auntie. She's Daddy's stepmother. But she's always insisted we call her auntie. I think it's something to do with the fact that stepmothers are never nice in fairy tales. I was the one who had to break the news of Miss Crane's death to Miss Batchelor.
Not a pleasant thing to have to do.
No. Barbie was hoping Edwina would go to Rose Cottage to recuperate after her terrible ordeal. Oh, poor Barbie. She was utterly distraught. She kept saying it was a wicked thing to do. To kill oneself is wicked. She said it over and over again.
How very unfortunate.
Apparently, Miss Crane dressed herself in a white sari and locked herself in a sort of garden shed in the compound, knowing she was going to commit sati. Just like an Indian widow. Why would anybody do that?
Perhaps she felt she'd come to the end of something. Her life, here. Her idea of what India should be and what it was becoming. Sometimes, out here, it's hard to ever really be ourselves.
But she could have gone back to England.
Perhaps it was more complicated than that. Are you sure you won't have some tea? I would welcome the company. Thank you. Is your father, Colonel Layton, here as well?
He's a prisoner of war in Germany.
I'm sorry. What has brought you to Kashmir?
It's the first real holiday we've had since war began. Susan and I joined the WAC in Pangkot. But Susan's getting married soon. So we thought we'd have a last holiday together.
Is her fiancé here as well? There seem to be rather a lot of young men coming and going from your boat.
No. Teddy's been posted to Murat. It's all happened rather suddenly.
So, will the wedding now be there?
That's why we're going back to Pangkot sooner than we planned. We'll have a few days there before heading off to Murat. We'll be guests of the Nawab.
He'll ensure you're well looked after.
You know him?
Henry and I stayed at his guest house once. The Nawab has the most extraordinary wazir working with him. A Russian emigre, Count Bronovsky.
We can't think of anything suitable to take as a present. Mother and Aunt Fenny have been trying to find something appropriate, but what does one buy for a Nawab?
What about a book of Ghafur's poetry?
Poetry?
The Nawab is distantly related to Muhammad Ali Qasim, the ex-chief minister. The classic 18th century Urdu poet Ghafur is connected to both of them. So you must accept, Ghafur, that your words are no more than the petals of a rose. They must fade, lose scent, and fall into obscurity. I have forgotten the rest.
How beautiful.
You must forgive me. My memory is not what it used to be.
What an excellent idea. I'll tell my mother and Aunt Fenny to get hold of a copy.
You could buy one here in Srinagar. They might even bind it for you within a couple of days. There used to be a shop in the Ranpur Bazaar which did rather excellent leather work and gold leaf blocking.
You're very knowledgeable, Lady Manners.
It's one of the advantages of old age. Sometimes it can come in quite useful.
I wish I knew so much. I really ought to go.
Will you come and see me again before you leave for Pankot?
I'll try. Thank you for letting me see Parvati.
Thank you for coming to visit me. I never saw her again, Lily, except to wave to. But after they'd gone, one of the boys from their cookboat brought round a little bunch of flowers with a card. From Sarah Layton.
From February to August 1942, you recall that the Congress of India was demanding that the British quit India, that they should leave India in Gandhi's memorable phrase, to God or to anarchy. But what of the Japanese and their true intentions once the British left?
That's pretty obvious.
Well, both decided to send a group of INA officers into Burma, equipped with radio communication to infiltrate secretly into India and contact Indian political leaders. It was a total failure.
Of course it was.
However, one of the officers in the operation said he believes that many of the men who joined the Indian National Army had every intention of either wrecking it from within or resuming their loyal duty once contact was re-established with the army to which they belonged.
I'm not sure I understand.
What I'm saying is, it is suggested that these men use the INA as a rather specialised means of escape from prison camp, which, as we all know, is a soldier's duty to try and accomplish.
Absolutely, yeah. Try and stop us.
I couldn't agree more.
I'm glad you agree, Captain Bingham. Please remember that while not all INA soldiers on the other side of the wire are necessarily intent on attacking us, they have let us down. Every single one of us. Please, do not forget this. Thank you.
What you were saying, Merrick, it was interesting, but I can't help feeling...
What?
Well, that 90% of the chaps who've joined the INA intend to come back to us at the first opportunity.
At the time, it was felt that a lot of men persuaded themselves to join the Indian National Army because they saw it as the quickest route back to base. Mm. But now I doubt very much whether that's the true reason in more than a handful of cases. It will end up as a simple matter of two opposed views of legality, and even that's going to be settled on a purely theoretical basis.
How?
Well, you can't hang 10,000 or more traitors.
You can shoot the officers.
Or perhaps just Chandra Bose, to encourage the others.
Well, perhaps they'll save us the trouble and shoot themselves.
Would you do that?
Good God, yes. Be the only way out, wouldn't it? I mean, if I'd done that and got recaptured.
Even for a man who thinks himself a patriot?
You said that didn't come into it.
I don't think it does. But a lot of them will think that they're patriots.
Well, no, I'm sorry. I find the idea of King's commissioned officers leading their men, our men, against us, utterly unspeakable. You coming for a drink?
I have a meeting with Selby Smith. Why don't we meet in B-mess later?
Fenny, dear, the ice in my glass needs some company.
Do you think you ought to have another, Millie?
Think doesn't come into it. It'll help me try to write this letter to John. Honestly, having to arrange this whole damn affair on my own is too much.
It's not an affair. It's Susan's wedding.
You're not helping, Fenny. I'm trying to describe Teddy in the nicest possible way, which is pretty difficult, seeing as I don't really care for the boy.
I think he's rather sweet.
You seem to forget that he was seeing Sarah before he took up with Susan.
Sarah doesn't seem in the slightest bit bothered.
I hardly think that's the point. I'd rather Susan waited, preferably until her father was home. But it seems she can't, and neither can Teddy. It's hard enough telling John that his youngest daughter is about to marry someone he's never heard of, let alone that I'm not that fond of him.
All you need tell him is the name of Teddy's regiment and that Susan and he love each other. There's nothing wrong, is there?
There's the question of his parents. It's easier if a man has parents. Teddy's father broke his neck hunting. His mother remarried and died in Mandalay. All there seems to be is an uncle in Shropshire.
I see. How unfortunate.
Oh, just pour me another drink, will you, Fenny?
I've been waiting for you in Bemis, Fenny.
Oh, sorry.
Is everything all right?
As a matter of fact, I got rather taken short.
Mm. Near rat tummy?
Sort of. I think it's gone off. I was about to have a bath.
I expect you've been sitting under the fan or drinking too much iced beer. I have some stuff that will settle it. Just hold the spoon while I give it a good shake. Now, I'll do it because it tends to come out rather slowly and then all at once. Now I'm wired.
Oh.
That didn't taste too ghastly, did it?
I've had worse. Must be the humidity.
Well, it's fairly low here.
I'm not used to it. I've been stationed up in the hills the past few months.
Ever been in Sundanagar?
I've never even heard of it.
It's where I was before they let me into the army. Your shoes go green overnight. I had an inspector who swore he was getting webbed feet, and he was an Indian.
Were you in the Indian police then?
I was DSP Sundanagar.
You there long?
Too long.
Telephone call for Captain Bingham.
Thank you. I'll be back soon, Merrick.
I'll meet you in Bemis for that drink. What will you have?
Oh, no, it's on me.
Come on, what will it be?
Merrick? Did you send Hussein on an errand?
Isn't he around?
No, he bloody well isn't. He's just buggered off.
Anything special you wanted?
I need a telegram sent straight away.
Will something happen?
Tony Bishop, my best man, has got jaundice. I need to let Susan know. The whole thing strikes me as a bit bloody much.
But what does?
Hussein, never being around when I need him. I've a good mind to boot him in the arse when I see him again.
I think I'm to blame for Hussein making himself scarce. I had to tick him off.
Huh? What about?
Small enough thing.
Was he complaining about me?
I got the impression he found working for two officers, well, shall we say, onerous. I wasn't conscious of anything so strong as a complaint against any one of us in particular.
But that's what it came to.
Come along, have a burra pig. Sahib, kokush, burra whisky soda, lau.
Oh.
Are you feeling bad again?
It'll go off in a minute.
Have another dose of that stuff in the morning. We'll be right as rain.
Before I forget completely, does a bicycle have any special significance to you?
A bicycle?
Hmm.
What do you mean, special significance?
Well, I don't know. Is it a sort of symbol of the Indian National Army?
Not that I'm aware of. Why?
Because there was one outside our quarters this afternoon. Broken and bent. Very rusty.
A broken bicycle?
And some strange chalk marks.
Where is it now?
It disappeared. And I'm afraid I've scuffed out the marks.
Do you remember them in any detail?
Afraid not. Think I'm right? About the INA?
Possibly. Have you told anyone?
I asked Hussein. He didn't know what I was talking about. I expect he thought I was accusing him of something.
He did imply you'd question his honesty. That was why I had to have a word with him. He must have got annoyed and run off. Have you mentioned the bicycle or the marks to anyone else?
No.
Then I shouldn't if I were you.
Fenny, will you pass the hat box? Just a minute.
Thank you.
Things are looking up. You're only 25 minutes behind schedule.
Teddy!
Susan, darling.
We weren't sure you'd be here to meet us.
I said I'd do my best. Mrs. Layton.
Teddy.
Mrs. Grace.
Good to see you again, Teddy.
Hello.
Sarah. I've got breakfast organised.
Oh, good.
Don't worry about your things. Noor Hussein's got the luggage in hand. Follow me.
I have missed you so much. Let me tell you how porridge. Did we find that other hat box?
I hope you're not going to tell us that the wedding has to be even earlier, Teddy. Because if so, there'll be no one to give Susan away. Arthur simply can't get down until Friday.
Oh, Aunt Fenny.
No, don't worry, Mrs. Grace. Saturday it is.
What about your best man?
It's all fixed. I asked the chap I share quarters with if he'd stand in, and he said he'd be glad to. Since then, he's been bustling around, making sure everything's all right at the guest house. He'll be along soon. His name's Merrick.
Merrick?
He's been very good to me. I do hope you'll like him.
Merrick. It doesn't ring a bell. What's his first name?
Ronald. He used to be in the Indian police.
Really? How on earth did he get out of that uniform and into this one?
You'll have to ask him.
Arthur and I know a young chap in the civil service who's tried everything possible to try and get transferred. Poor thing hasn't been at all successful.
Did you enjoy Kashmir, Mrs. Grace?
Wrong end of the season. I think it's just. And of course we had to cut it short.
Yes, I'm sorry.
We had a vaguely unpleasant experience too. Millie insisted on moving the boat up to the spot where she and John spent their honeymoon. There was only one other boat there. Unfortunately, our neighbour turned out to be someone it was impossible to visit.
It's very nice.
I'll give you three guesses.
I give up.
Old Lady Manners and the child.
Oh, I see.
What is the guest house like, Teddy?
I've only seen it from the outside, Mrs. Layton. The station commander says it's pretty comfortable. Ronald Merrick knows more about it than I do. You'll have it all to yourselves, and it's in the palace grounds.
Shall we see the Nawab?
Why should you want to see the Nawab, Susan?
Because there was a scandal about him. He fell in love with a white woman and followed her all the way to the south of France.
Who told you that?
Aunt Fanny.
There was a story about some missing jewels. Apparently the Nawab wanted to marry this woman, but she didn't want to marry him. She claimed he'd given her some jewellery. Her services rendered, no doubt. He threatened legal action, and they say Count Brunovsky acted as a go-between, and was so successful that the Nawab brought him back and made him his Prime Minister.
I've heard of Brunovsky.
You haven't answered my question, Teddy. Shall we see the Nawab?
I don't know. He's away at the moment. The station commander says we ought to invite him to the reception, but it's not certain whether he'll come.
Why? Because the reception is to be at the club?
Oh, no, he's allowed in as a guest.
Why, then?
Because of Ramadan? He'll be fasting between sunup and sundown.
I'd like to have a Nawab at my wedding, especially one who used to be wicked. Besides, if we make a fuss of him, he'll have to send a wedding present, and it might turn out to be a tray of super rubies, or a fabulous emerald, or a few spare ropes of pearls.
Here's Merrick now. Let me introduce you. Merrick, this is Susan.
I've heard a lot about you, Miss Lane.
Hello.
This is Sarah, Sue's sister.
Captain Merrick.
And Mrs. Grace.
So you're the replacement best man.
And this is my mother-in-law, Mrs. Layton.
Not for a few days, Teddy.
The cars are ready if you've finished breakfast.
I couldn't eat another thing.
I thought perhaps you could travel with Susan and me, Mrs. Layton.
Absolutely not. I'll travel with Captain Merrick and Sarah. Then I'll feel less like a mother-in-law.
We're passing the church now, Mrs. Layton. Driver, Aista Jalo. The chaplain's name is Fox, by the way.
Oh, charming.
What's our schedule, Captain Merrick?
I've written it all down. There's a small party at the club tonight to introduce you to the General. Dinner at the station commander's tomorrow. Palace motor car will be at your disposal for shopping trips and such. Other motor cars from the palace garage will be lent for the wedding.
Tell me some more about Captain Merrick, Teddy. What is he?
A G3I.
You mentioned he was in the Indian police. What rank?
Superintendent or something.
What district?
Oh, Aunt Fenny, you ask too many questions.
Sunda something.
Sundanagar?
Yeah.
A backward area. Relatively unimportant. We lived there years ago. We were glad to move.
Anything else we should know, Captain Merrick?
That's about all. Oh, except there's a young fellow who's distantly related to the Nawab and whose job it is to see that you have everything you need. He's an Indian, of course, a Muslim. I think you'll like him.
What's his name?
Ahmed Qasim. He's the son of Muhammad Ali Qasim.
The ex-chief minister, but isn't he locked up?
Well, that's the point. It's something I think necessary to remember when dealing with young Qasim. He's an attractive young fellow, well-educated, speaks first-rate English, not in the least the usual surly type of westernized Indian who thinks he's a cut above everybody. Believe me, I've had some experience of that sort.
I'm sure you have. Teddy tells us you were in the police. My sister is dying to know how you managed to get out of that uniform and into this one. She knows a young man in the civil who's tried everything but still hasn't managed to swing it. Were you ever in Rampur?
Some years ago, in a very junior capacity.
And before your army commission?
I was DSP Sundanagar.
Ah, yes. We lived there once. Rather a remote district. Was there much trouble there last year?
Fortunately, very little. Which helped me persuade the powers that be that I could be better employed elsewhere.
You were telling us about Mr. Cassim's son.
Yes, I was. I don't quite know how to put this. In Rampur, Ahmed would present no problem. But this is native sovereign territory, and as a representative of the palace, young Cassim is entitled to certain consideration. One can't treat him as a sort of errand boy.
We promised to be well behaved.
The point I intended to make was that friendly and cooperative though Cassim is on the surface, it's as well to treat him cautiously as well as considerately, because it would be unnatural if he didn't present us a bit.
We shan't have time to let it worry us, Captain Merrick.
I shouldn't think you will. Ah, there's the palace now. You're looking in the wrong direction, Miss Lake.
I'm not looking in any direction. There's too much glare.
I was afraid you'd find that sitting up front. I'll tell the driver to stop and we can change places.
No, I can see it now.
What a beautiful colour.
My Aunt Mabel would call it Dusty Rose.
Will she be at the wedding?
It's too far for her to come.
She'll stay in Pancot with her house guest, Miss Batchelor.
Her permanent house guest.
Barbie's more of a companion, Mother.
If you look past the minaret among the trees at the end of the lakeside road, that grey, Palladian-style mansion is the guest house.
Do you know, it reminds me of the drive up to Grandfather's old place.
But that was all laurel and rhododendrons.
The effect is the same.
The chap in the scarlet turban is Abdul Rahman. He's the head bearer and belongs to the Nawab. The little fellow holding the topi is the steward. His name's Abraham, an Indian Christian.
And who is that, Captain Merrick?
That, Miss Layden, is young Mr. Cassim.
Oh, Mother, it's so exciting.
No ice in my whiskey, Brunovsky.
Preparing yourself for a night of orange juice, Ahmed.
I suppose I am.
So, Mrs. Layton drinks, you say. Do you mean in secret?
I don't know about that. But she begins first, finishes last, and has two drinks to anybody else's one. Also, I've noticed that her behavior is erratic.
In what way erratic?
She is irritable one moment, almost friendly the next. The almost friendliness occurs when she has a glass in her hand.
Is she still attractive?
Her hair is not grey. She frequently powders her nose.
Her sister, Mrs. Grace, she is also erratic?
No. She is perfectly predictable. You can depend on her to be rude at any time. And she does not bother lowering her voice.
Dear boy, what have you overheard her saying about you?
It seems I am quite efficient. For an Indian.
But it was a compliment.
I would also make a good maître d'hôtel, if I didn't stink so abominably of garlic.
I doubt Mrs. Grace would know a good maître d'hôtel from a bad one. The English seldom do, but she meant well. And you do stink from garlic.
A garlic strengthens the constitution. My father used to carry an onion in his pocket to ward off colds.
I cannot imagine Muhammad Ali Qasim walking around with an onion in his pocket. Tell me about the two Miss Laytons, the one who is to be married. Let's begin with her.
Yeah, what an inquisitive man you are. People tend to do things for Susan Layton. She must have trained them to think she can't do them for herself. Whenever she lifts a finger to do something on her own, she makes it look like an attempt at the impossible.
Do you think perhaps it is because of the wedding?
Oh, no. She has probably always been the center of attention.
Is she fond of this Captain Bingham?
I'm not really sure I know what fond is. My father is fond of my mother. My brother had been fond of the army. I am fond of chewing cloves of garlic, and you, Branovsky, are fond of gossip. Fond seems to be a combination of impulse, appetite, and gratification. But even this does not define it properly. No, I don't imagine she is really fond of Captain Bingham.
You mean it is merely a physical attraction?
On his part, yes. He is more attracted to her than she is to him.
How do you know?
I think when he touches her, instead of being agitated, she is irritated. Especially when she has her mind on the cut of a dress.
The English are so very shy of their sexuality. If you were a fly on the wall and saw Miss Leighton and Captain Bingham together, you might be surprised. Even shocked. What are you thinking?
Of being a fly on the wall.
Does the idea appeal?
Flies sometimes get swatted.
Well, every occupation has its hazards. Another drink?
I really shouldn't.
You've had enough to see you through an evening of fruit juice with Professor Nair.
I shall manage.
Tell me about the other sister, the Miss Leighton who isn't to be married. I imagine she isn't as pretty. Perhaps she's more serious-minded.
She asks a lot of questions.
About what?
The administration in Marat, native customs, local history.
Is she so very plain, then?
I find all white girls unattractive. They look only half-finished. When they have fair hair, they look even more unnatural.
She is fair, then?
Yes.
Cigarette?
Thank you.
Have you kept your promise to me and written to your father?
No.
Why not?
The same reason as always. I begin writing and stop. I write to my mother. She tells him what I am doing.
It isn't the same, is it?
No, but he's used to the idea that I'm a disappointing sort of son.
You are more used to it than he is. Incidentally, Nawab Sahib will be back from Gopalakand on Friday. He will be pleased with the poems of Ghafur. Which of them thought of it?
I don't know. Will Nawab Sahib be going to the wedding reception?
Well, he will if I say so. What is arranged for tomorrow?
They are going shopping again. But in the morning, before breakfast, Miss Leighton wants to ride.
Which Miss Leighton?
The inquisitive one.
Alone?
I'm expected to ride with her, I think. I shall keep a respectful few paces behind, naturally.
Who else is there in the wedding party?
A Major Grace is arriving on Friday. He is the bride's uncle. And a Captain Merrick.
Merrick?
Do you know him?
I don't think so. Merrick. A vaguely familiar name.
My time is up, Dmitri.
Oh, please, give my felicitations to Professor Nayet. One other thing. Perhaps you could find out about his visitor.
He has a visitor?
Two. A woman and an elderly scholar by the name of Pandit Baba.
How do you know that, Dmitri?
It is my job to know, Ahmed.
You do not look like your father, Mr. Qasim.
Most people would agree with you, Pandit Saab.
Why do you answer me in a foreign tongue?
Because I speak Hindi rather badly.
Do you wish us to converse in Urdu?
I should prefer English, Pandit Saab. It's a language we always speak at home.
Do you not feel shamed to speak always in the language of a foreign power and in the language of your father's jailers?
No, I am not ashamed. You had a pleasant journey from Mayapur, Panditji.
I did.
And this is your first visit to Marat?
I was at one time living in Marat. But for the last few years, I have been living in Mayapur.
You are staying in Marat for a week or two?
It will not be long.
Only a short holiday, then?
This is not a holiday. There are texts in the library that I want to look at. And I hope to give a talk to the students in the morning.
If you lived in Mayapur, Panditji, then perhaps you knew the English girl, Miss Manners.
I did not know her personally.
She's dead now. She had a child. There was a notice in the newspaper.
You have some personal interest in the matter?
It was talked about a lot at the time. Mention Mayapur these days and everyone automatically thinks of Miss Manners and the rape in the Bibigar Gardens.
It's not established that there was a rape. Only arrests and imprisonment without trial. Imprisonment not for rape, but for so-called political activities.
So-called?
How can one say definitely when nothing is made public? When there is such a convenient regulation as the Defense of India rules?
Did you know any of the men who were arrested, Panditji?
They were boys of some education.
Did you know the one who was friendly with Miss Manners?
Hari Kumar.
Did you know him?
When he first returned from England, his aunt sought my assistance to teach him Hindi. He knew only English people and English ways. In Mayapur, he could not have them.
But eventually he had one English friend, Miss Manners.
The head of the police in Mayapur, the English district superintendent, was also associated with the girl. He personally conducted the interrogations and ordered the boys to be beaten and forced to eat beef. He was only interested in punishing these boys, especially Kumar, because of his association with the white girl. District superintendent was an evil man, Mr. Qasim. His cruelty and perversions were known to his men and consequently to some of us.
Is Mr. Kumar still in prison?
In the Kandipak jail in Rampur. For many months his aunt, Mrs. Guptasen, did not know which prison they'd sent him to. Now, at last, she's allowed to write and send him food and books. I know these things because I am in her confidence. Please excuse me, Mr. Qasim. I have some work to prepare for the morning. And Professor Nair is, no doubt, ready for dinner.
Are you a Sunni or a Shia, Mr. Qasim?
A Shia.
I'm not sure I know the difference.
The Shias dispute the rights of the three caliphs who succeeded Muhammad. You could say it's a political division.
Who do the Shias say should have succeeded Muhammad?
A man called Ali. He was Muhammad's son-in-law. We mourn his death at the beginning of Muharram, the Muhammadan New Year.
Then Muawab's a Shia.
He is.
Are there many Sunnis in Murat?
A few.
You and I are in similar positions, Mr. Qasim.
Are we?
Both our fathers are in prison.
Yes.
I think if you rode on a bit, this damn thing would stop eating grass and at least pretend to do what I wanted it to do.
Keep him like this. Hold the reins in short so that the horse's neck is arched.
Looks painful.
I assure you it isn't.
Come on!
Was it wise, Millie?
Was what wise, Fenny?
Letting Sarah go riding alone with Mr. Qasim.
I didn't let her, as you call it. I didn't know.
Didn't know? You mean she just sneaked off?
Oh, Fenny, what's wrong with you? My daughters don't sneak off. They go. They don't have to ask permission. They're of age. They do what they like. One gets married, the other goes riding. How am I supposed to stop them? And why should I try?
Over there.
That's Count Bronowski's house.
Is he really a count?
Yes, I think so.
It's funny, Mr. Qasim, but I've not once heard the muezzin since I've been here. And yet, there are all those minarets.
I expect the wind's been in the wrong direction.
They do call, then?
Oh, yes, they call.
5 times a day?
Yes.
Will the Eid al-Fitr prayers be said in the mosques or out here?
Out here? Why?
I read somewhere that they're supposed to be held in the open air, if possible.
You must have seen such meetings before in open places.
No, I don't think so. I suppose because I've only been in places where they make them stay in the mosques in case of trouble. Or perhaps I've seen them, but not known what was going on.
Last year, the Eid fell during the wet season. The prayers were indoors then.
Why is it preferred for them to be out in the open?
Because of the crowds, I expect. The idea is wholly practical.
You mean you have to cater for all the people who never go into a mosque normally?
Yes. But I'm no kind of authority. The imam at the Abu Qurim Mosque would probably have a different explanation.
Exactly when will the Eid fall?
When the new moon is seen.
Supposing it's cloudy?
Then you calculate and usually make it 30 days instead of 29 or 30 after the beginning of Ramadan to be on the safe side. But it won't be cloudy this year, and of course the calculation is already made. In fact, the Eid is due about a week after your sister's wedding.
Is it? But how nice. That means everybody will be happy. Do you come this way, Mr. Kasim? When you ride alone?
Sometimes.
Dare we gallop?
If you'd like to.
Where to? The city gates?
There's a nullah. It's too wide to jump. We'll have to bear left and join the city gate road.
I don't mind nullahs.
If you wish.
Come on, then.
You're becoming impossible to talk sensibly to, Millie.
Do stop going on, Fenny.
You know perfectly well why it's unwise for Sarah to ride alone with an Indian of that kind.
What kind?
Any kind, but especially of Mr. Kasim's kind.
What of Mr. Kasim's kind, Aunt Fenny?
I'm sorry, I didn't know you were listening. I was saying I thought it unwise for you to ride alone with Mr. Kasim.
Yes, I agree. It was unwise. I invited him for breakfast. You'll be pleased to hear he said no. We shan't go riding again.
What happened?
Nothing happened. I meant it was unwise because it made us both self-conscious. Never occurred to me that it might. It wasn't until we actually set out that I realised it was the first time I'd been alone with an Indian who wasn't a servant. And there seemed to be nothing to talk about.
He is a perfectly pleasant young man.
He only spoke when spoken to, and kept almost exactly the same number of paces behind me from start to finish.
I understand his brother is an officer. But these days one simply can't tell what these young Indians are up to, let alone what they're thinking.
Perhaps they have the same difficulty in regard to us.
Well, perhaps they do. But on the whole, we ought not to let that concern us. We have responsibilities that let us out of trying to see ourselves as they see us. In any case, it would be a waste of time. To establish a relationship with Indians, you can only afford to be yourself, and let them like it or lump it.
Sarah?
Out here, are we ever really able to be ourselves?
What did you say?
A woman I met in Kashmir told me that out here, it's sometimes hard to be ourselves. And I think she might be right.
Oh? What woman, dear?
Just someone I met.
Have a question, Lady Manners?
I'm afraid I suddenly can't remember your name.
Rowan. Nigel Rowan.
Of course. Memory is such a curious thing. My husband had an astonishing memory. Mine is only so-so. Do you have the photograph, Captain Rowan?
His Excellency gave me an envelope which he said you might ask for.
I'll have it now, if I may. Would you unseal it for me, please?
Of course. I feel I ought to warn you it was taken some time ago. There are bound to be changes.
So that is what Harry Kumar looks like.
Before we reach Candiput, I shall pull the blinds down over the windows. The man sitting next to the driver has all the necessary documents to pass us through the gates. The car will stop twice. First time when we are at the entrance to the prison. When it stops the second time, we shall be inside. We shall go straight to a room marked O.
Shall I be alone in the room throughout?
Yes.
I shall see and hear, but not be seen or heard.
Yes. You will be perfectly safe. When we've finished, I'll be back with you in 5 minutes. I'll be joined by Clark and an official from the Home and Law Department of the Secretariat, Mr. Gopal.
Yeah. I shan't want this photograph again.
Son?
Acha. I think perhaps we should lower the blinds now. We're coming into Candiput.
In case I forget afterwards, Captain Rowan, thank you for what you have done and for what you have undertaken to do. I am very grateful.
Kya ham Hindi ya angrezi men bat karengi?
Angrezi.
Very well, in English then. Your name is Kumar.
Han.
Your given name is Hari.
Han.
I understood we elected to speak in English. So far you have answered me in Hindi.
I beg your pardon. It was a slip. I seldom have the opportunity of speaking English to anyone but myself.
These proceedings are authorized by an order of the Governor in Council dated 15th May 1944. The purpose of the proceedings is to examine any facts relevant in your case to the detention order under the Defence of India Rule. You may wish to decline to submit to the examination. I am instructed to advise you that you should not assume that refusal or acceptance of the examination or the examination itself will have any bearing on the order for your detention or upon its eventual termination. On that understanding, I now ask you whether you decline or submit to the examination.
I submit to the examination on that undertaking.
From a time towards the end of February or the beginning of March until August 1942, your social life became more or less exclusively involved with your friendship with Daphne Manners.
It was the first time I'd had a social life, so it did not become exclusively involved with that. And the date is wrong. It was from February or March until the end of July. At the time of my arrest, I had not seen Miss Manners since the night we went to the temple, about 3 weeks previously.
So you always insisted. But tell me about the men.
I'm not sure which men you are talking about.
Sharma and his friends. When was the last occasion you saw them?
On the night of my arrest as a suspect in the criminal assault on Miss Manners. They had also been arrested. I was taken through a room in which they were held.
Did you speak to them?
No.
Did they speak to you?
One of them said, "Hello, Harry."
You didn't reply?
No.
Why?
They were behind the bars of a cell in a room.
And what was their demeanour?
They were laughing and joking.
And you were not?
No.
What happened then?
I was handed over to two policemen and taken into a room downstairs.
May I ask a question?
Of course, Mr. Gopal.
Please, recollect carefully, Mr. Kumar. The report says you were told you had been taken into custody to help with inquiries being made into the criminal assault on an English woman in the Bibigar Gardens. You said you had not seen Miss Manners since the night you visited the temple. On being asked why you named Miss Manners, you refused to answer and showed signs of distress.
Merrick said he was making inquiries about an Englishwoman who was missing. His words were, "An Englishwoman, you know which one."
What do you think was meant by signs of distress?
I was shivering.
Shivering?
The interview was in a private room in the basement. It was air-conditioned.
This room is air-conditioned. You are not shivering now.
No.
Why were you shivering on that occasion?
I had no clothes on.
No clothes?
For nearly an hour.
You were asked questions by police officers While you were in a state of undress?
Yes.
Why were you naked?
I had been stripped.
For what purpose?
Originally for inspection, I believe.
A physical examination?
Inspection would be more accurate. He was looking for signs of blood on my genitals.
Who was the doctor who carried out the inspection?
And there was no doctor present.
Then who was responsible?
The district superintendent of police, Mr. Ronald Merrick.
In The Day of the Scorpion, episode 4 of The Raj Quartet by Paul Scott, Sarah Layton was played by Leah Williams, Mildred Layton by Geraldine James, Susan Layton by Alex Tregear, Teddy Bingham by Nicholas Bolton, Ronald Merrick by Mark Baisley, Barbie Batchelor by Marsha Warren, and Lady Manners by Irene Sutcliffe. Gary Waldhorn played Count Bronowski, Selena Griffiths, Fanny Grace, Nadim Sawala, Pandit Baba, and Shiv Graywell, Ahmed Kassi. Nigel Rowan was played by Benedict Cumberbatch, Hari Kumar by Prasanna Puwanaraja, and Gopal by Bhaskar Patel. Other parts were played by Stuart McLaughlin and Robert Hasty. Music was by Raymond Mirza. The Day of the Scorpion is dramatized by Shelley Silas, and the director is Jeremy Mortimer.
And Lady Manners, here's some shocking details about Harry's brutal interrogation at the hands of Merrick when The Day of the Scorpion continues in our Drama Hour tomorrow. Now, in Great Lives this week here on BBC Radio 4 Extra, the man behind the Sex Pistols, Malcolm McLaren, is the life championed by the PR agent, Mark Borkowski.
Just from the start, what did he look like? I've been looking at the film archive, and it's extraordinarily difficult to describe the man. There's something a little bit fey about him when he's younger. Tousle hair. Describe his appearance.
He's ginger hair, and there's something kind of slightly etiolated about him. It's quite hard to actually pin down what he looks like. Certainly fey, almost undernourished, actually. I mean, he kind of looks like someone who's, as he was born in 1946, he almost looks like a war baby.
Did you know him, Mark?
I did know him, and I subsequently worked with him in 1998. Mm. He was bewitching. He talked and talked. I mean, he had a sort of odd voice, a sort of whiny sort of voice and so on, but he just caught you. I mean, the subject matter, it was very difficult to shut him up.
I was a manager, but I was a spokesman. I was a creator. I was a character that they denied being an artist. That couldn't do that. But when you produced the group, your name always preceded it. And I kept saying to the group, and I kept saying to the record company, you know, the reason I can't sell this group is because I am constantly bigger than the group.
I felt watching him on film that there was a great sense of presence about the man, that he had a strong sense of himself, that if you went into a room, you would know immediately where Malcolm McLaren was. Is that right, Chris?
Yes, but at the same time, he could blend into the corners, you know, of the room, and he'd be sitting opposite you, and you almost wouldn't see he was there at the same time. I mean, I don't think there was anyone else really in Malcolm's world, actually, apart from himself. And I remember seeing Malcolm give one of his talks that he gave. This was probably about 6 years ago, and it amazed me that everyone else had been written out of the story. There was no Vivian Westwood. There was no Bernie Rose, the manager of The Clash, who actually discovered Johnny Rotten. There was no one in that story, really, apart from Malcolm.
How does this apparently confident, apparently self-possessed person emerge from what we know about the childhood that he had? Tell us a little